Blog Talk Radio.
If it's smooth jazz, then the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds are talking about it on Talking Smooth Jazz, your place for all things smooth. Artist.
Hello, Brian. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hello there.
Bonnie James, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you guys.
Labor, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Music.
This is the Jazz Queen with the Smooth Jazz News Minute.
With the smoothest show on internet radio, your hosts, the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds.
Hello and welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz, where you meet the artist. This is the Jazz Queen along with Mike Reynolds. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Terry, what's going on today?
Mike, you set a record today. 7 minutes. Seven seconds. 7 seconds, you set a record.
Hey, yes, yes. Well, like I said, I'm sitting here, like I said, still having a good weekend barbecue and everything like that. So, you know, so happy Memorial Day to everybody. And I hope everybody's
Thank
out
you.
There grilling and eating hamburgers and hot dogs and everything like that.
All right, there you go. Welcome to the chat room, Andrew Harris and CD McGee. Welcome. Thank you for tuning in. The phone number for our guest today, or if you have a question you want to call in and ask our guest, the phone number is 646-716-5485. You can join us in the chat room by going to TalkingSmoothJazz.com and clicking on the TSJ Radio Show page and then the Play Chat button under Tony Wynn's name. Today we are talking smooth jazz with saxophonist Tony Wynn. His style includes classic, bebop, smooth, Latin, and acid jazz. His current CD is called A Matter of Fact. Tony Wynn, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hey, Terry, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Meet Mike.
What's going on, Tony? It's gonna matter.
Not much, man. I appreciate you guys inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Definitely. Well, you're welcome. It's our pleasure as well. So Tony's current CD, as I said, is called A Matter of Fact, and he has another CD also called A Quiet Time. Quiet Time was released in 2005, and A Matter of Fact released in 2007. So Tony, tell us about your music.
My music is a collection of a lot of different styles. I have Latin style music on there. I have more of the funkier stuff. I have, you know, the typical smooth jazz, and then I have several tunes on there that have the classical jazz flavor.
Okay, and where does your bebop style come from?
My bebop style comes from my earlier years listening to my dad, play jazz on Sunday. He would play a lot of John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis. So my first initial introduction to jazz were, you know, from the classical or the bebop jazz artists, you know, Dexter Gordon, you know, guys like that.
Okay.
I really haven't included any of that type of music on my CDs, you know, since, you know, it's hard to get, you know, play time with that type of music. But when I perform live, I always include, you know, several, you know, those type tunes.
And where are you located, Tony?
I'm in Florida.
Okay. All right.
Now, Tony, your dad was, you actually, both your parents were musicians and everything. How did, now, you are a self-taught musician.
Yes.
Was it your idea to start with the flute and the sax?
Well, initially, I was into art. I was an artist, and my parents, you know, pretty much focused, you know, on that aspect, you know, of my talent. But I've always had a interest in, you know, in music. My dad was a clarinetist, and back in the early 50s, he actually got into the Air Force playing clarinet, because back in those days it was really hard, you know, for African Americans to get in that particular branch of the military. But he went in as a clarinet player, and he told me that he had the same teacher as Cannonball Adderley. My dad is from Tampa, Florida.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about your art, because you paint.
Yes. I was into art, and that's what I pursued into college. But ironically, my younger brother, who took up the clarinet, you know, with my father's insistence, you know, put it down after junior high school. So I grabbed the clarinet and took it to college with me, and you know, sort of experimented and played around with it and tried to imitate a lot of the music that I was listening to, you know, without giving away my age, you know, a lot of the early Grover Washington, you know, type stuff, a Weather Report, you know, music like that, Ronnie Laws. So I started mm-hmm. experimenting with that, and if anyone knows anything about a clarinet, it didn't quite have the punch that I wanted. So I went to the nearest pawn shop and found a saxophone, and that's how it all started, by accident, mm. actually.
Mm. Okay. All right. Now, I also read that you performed with Isaac Hayes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was incredible. There's a festival that they have down here in Orlando, and it's called the Zora Neale Hurston Festival. And this is in honor of a poet and an author. And they have this festival in the early spring. Well, it just so happened that Isaac Hayes came down, and actually his band got stuck in Atlanta in an ice storm. So I knew a couple of, you know, individuals in the radio industry down here, and they gave me a call and says, we need some help because Isaac Hayes' band isn't here, and he's going to go on within a couple of hours. Well, you know, me growing up on Isaac Hayes' music, I knew all his music. So I packed my horns and headed to the show, and on the way I called up a couple of musician friends of mine, you know, a bass player, a keyboard player. And we got there. There was nobody there but Isaac Hayes, a percussionist and a vocalist. That's all he had. So we met him in the trailer, and we talked to him, and he wanted to know if we knew his music. I said, man, I grew up on your stuff. I know all your stuff. You know, so we, you know, went on stage, and he started talking, and I think he was basically stalling to make sure we were all, you know, in tune. And then it just went from there, but it was an incredible experience. You know, everybody you know, gave him the support that he needed, and it was incredible. It was an opportunity, and like my dad would tell me, you know, I'll be ready, you know, with your A game. You never know what's going to happen, that turned out to be incredible. And he passed away a few years later.
And was that the only time you got the chance to play with him?
Yes. Well, I played with him one more time. He played down in south of me, which is West Palm Beach. And he gave me a call, and I went down there, and I played with him. I think Chaka Khan was also, you know, on the bill there. But it was incredible, and so I actually got to play with him a couple of times.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, that's a great experience for you. So that's good.
Oh yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Before we came on air, Mike, Tony and I were talking about the music biz as it is now, and Tony, what do you think in terms of where the industry is going now? How is it affecting you and any other fellow musicians that you know may be talking to or heard from?
Well, a lot of the radio platforms are starting to disappear as far as the smooth jazz genre. I'm hearing from, you know, friends, you know, around the country that they're losing their smooth jazz radio station. We had a radio station in Tampa called WSJT, and they recently changed their format, you know, away from smooth jazz. Also, we have a radio station in Orlando, which is WLOQ, which caters a lot to smooth jazz. But, you know, every once in a while you'll hear something, you know, like Earth, Wind, and Fire on there. Then there's another radio station which is close to me, because I'm on the West Coast, and it's and this radio station caters a lot to the smooth jazz, you know, artists. But it's becoming very difficult, you know, to showcase, you know, your work on over the air. I don't think it has anything to do with people losing interest in the music, because if you know as well as I do, whenever there's a jazz event going on, I mean, it's packed.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But it's about the money. It's all about the money, and the majority of radio stations, you know, want the advertisement. They want the backing, you know, by different companies and products. In order to get that, they want, you know, these companies want to back the stations that are reaching a larger larger audience, you know, which will be, you know, your R&B, which will be your country, your rock, you know, your top 40.
Yeah, very true.
All right. Well, I know that you had mentioned, too, that you and Mike had talked a lot about hip-hop and that a lot of hip-hop that you and, you know, maybe other artists were starting to do things the way hip-hop artists did them back in the day. Would you explain that a little bit more?
Well, initially, hip-hop artists, you know, created their own music. You know, they had their own studios. They pressed their own CDs, and they would sell them and distribute them, you know, at different clubs, you know, and out the back of their, you know, cars and stuff like that. And that tends to be the way to go if you don't have backing by a record label. Okay, now what I've been doing is I've been basically doing the same thing. I've been creating my own music. I send my music to there's several different places you can send your masters to, and they'll press your music, you know, for, you know, a pretty reasonable price. And I've been doing that, and I sell my music on CDBaby.com, also on Amazon. There's a lot of different places that you can acquire this music. And also I sell my music at my concerts. Now, like I said, this is initially how rap artists got their music out. You know, if you don't have major distribution, okay, then you have to use any means necessary to get your music heard. And there's a plus and there's a minus to this. The plus to doing your own distribution is your music has a longer shelf life. Okay, that means, like, for example, my first CD came out, well, like 2004, 2005. It's still selling, you know. And good music has, you know, it has no age. You know what I'm saying? So, so this approach, I hope I'm not covering too much at one time, but this approach allows artists, you know, to be a lot more creative, have a lot more artistic control over their material, and also it allows them, you know, to money wise, you know, be compensated, you know, for their hard work.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, you know, you do what you have to do.
You do what you
as
have
an artist
do.
These days. Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's listen to some music.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, because I'm just going to go to some music, but go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay, what I was saying is, I represent a large majority of unsigned artists that are doing this, and you will find us in every large city, small town that's doing this, you know, that's listening to jazz.
Okay. All right, now let's listen to some music. Tony was gracious enough to send an extra CD, so I have a CD to give away. It is the A Matter of Fact CD, and I will give this away to the first caller at 646-716-5485. 646-716-5485. So let's see. Tony, I'm going to start with track number 4, You're the One. Tell me about this one.
Well, You're the One is something I came up with after, you know, listening to, believe it or not, listening to some Herbie Hancock, and I really got into, you know, the melodic approach, you know, to the music like he does. And I really tried to come up with something different, something with a new feel, and, you know, something that doesn't sound cookie cutter, you know, like you hear, you know, a lot of times, you know, everybody wants to sound like Boney James or David Sanborn. So this is something that I came up with, trying to find my voice, trying to do something different.
Okay, this is You're the One from Tony Wynn's A Matter of Fact CD. All right. Very nice. That was You're the One from Tony's A Matter of Fact CD. Tony, you're playing just about every instrument on this CD, aren't you?
Yes, except for the guitar. Except for the guitar. And a lot of that is due to necessity. You know, a lot of times it's hard to get musicians, you know, together, you know, for, you know, unless you come up with the right amount of money. So I had to teach myself, you know, keyboards, you know, bass, you know, percussion, you know, all those things. But like I said, I do enlist some musicians, you know, to sit in. Like the guitar player on that song is an independent artist from Tampa. It goes by the name of T-Fox. And you gotta love that wah-wah, right?
Oh, yes.
You know, that was going to be my next question to you, Tony, about you playing just about every instrument, because you know how to play a lot of instruments, like the keyboards, congas, flute, you know, sax. So you self-taught yourself on every instrument that you know how to play?
Yes, yes, I did.
Wow.
Yes, I did. Yeah, like my first CD, you know, I was having difficulty getting a keyboard player. You know, I was able to get one guy over to lay down some tracks for me, but, you know, after, you know, constantly having to chase people around, I said, you know what, I'm going to teach myself how to play piano. Because like they say, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
You
right.
know, so I taught myself how to play piano. You know, I learned some basic chords, you know, and I was able to pull it off.
Wow. Mm. Now, how long did it take you to learn these instruments? Because that had to be, I mean, that had to take quite some time to learn them, you know.
And
wow.
Do you
well,
read music too?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Okay.
No,
okay.
I don't. I mean, it's kind of funny how I do it. Like, I'll get on the keyboards, and I'll find these chords that I like, all right? And then, and this is slightly embarrassing, but what I do, I would take a little piece of tape, and I would put it on each note, each key of the keyboard, so I wouldn't lose my fingering. And then when I track myself, you know, on my system, you know, I knew where the fingering would go, you know, so... And then as time went on, I didn't have to do that anymore, and I knew exactly, you know, what I was going to play. It took several months. I mean, of course I can't do any fantastic solos or anything, but, you know, I can do enough to lay down some nice chords, you know.
So in the beginning, when you wanted to write a song, was it based on what you would play on the instrument, or was it based on what you had in your head and you tried to put it, you know, you tried to play it on the instrument?
Well, I do things a bit backwards, okay? When initially I'm coming up with a song or I want to create something, first I come up with the beat, okay? The beat determines a lot for me, whether it's going to be fast song, slow song, you know, funky, whatever. First I come up with the beat, so I lay down my drum beats. And then I come in with the bass. I lay down the bass. And then I'll come in thirdly, and I'll put in the keyboards. Okay, now after I've put in the keyboards, then I may add something like strings. Then I'll come in and I'll lay down like some, you know, some percussion, you know, because I have a set of congas and bongos, and I have an array of percussive instruments, and I'll lay all that down. Now, after I've laid all that down, I mean, I know this is going to sound weird, but after I've laid all that down, I'll listen to it for a while. And actually, the song tells me which instrument to use, whether it be my alto, tenor, soprano, or flute. So that comes last, believe it or not. So I guess I'm sort of a dyslexic a musician, because I do it totally opposite. So when you hear my songs and you hear the saxophone or the flute or the melodies or whatever that I'm playing, that actually comes last.
Oh, I see.
I know y'all
okay.
are sitting there scratching your head like, how in the heck did they do that? Well, you know something? I don't know either, but it's worked for me so long, I'm not going to try to figure it out. I just do it.
And, you know, we've talked to other musicians that are self-taught and don't know how to read music, and I just
right.
often wondered, how do you write a song? Does a melody come to your head first, and then you try to put it on the play it on the instrument, or do you hit on the instrument first and then write the song? So it's just interesting to me how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Before we get into some more music, I wanted to ask you real fast. Now, you were associated, or are you still associated with the group Groove Factor?
Groove Factor now is any musician that I call to do a gig, and I have several bass players, drummers, keyboard players. I have a trumpet player that I use all the time, and he's featured on one of my songs, which is Latin Skies. I use him consistently, but I have an array of musicians that I can call upon. And it's a lot better that way because, you know, in between gigs, you know, some guys get frustrated. They're like, man, when are we going to play, man? I got to put food on the table. See, I just call people mm-hmm. as I need them. So I have a Rolodex with many different musicians that I call, you know, for any given concert. And that's the Groove Factor.
Oh,
okay.
I see. Good. All right, well, let's listen to another song. This is the title track, A Matter of Fact. And there's you also sing as well.
Yes, I
do. So you're
yes,
doing
I
it
do.
All.
Yes. Now you hear me singing, and you'll hear maybe the flute playing in the background, but that's me. So there's no magic involved. I'm not doing these things at the same time. They're all on separate tracks.
Right. Okay.
But I am getting a little more comfortable with my vocal work. You know, I'm really fond of the fact that Walter Beasley does that, and he's somewhat of a mentor to me, and I'm incorporating a lot of that into my shows as well.
Okay, and you know, you kind of look like Walter Beasley too.
Really?
From the picture on the Matter of Fact CD, I think you kind of look like him.
Wow. I've been told that I look like several different people, but that's a compliment.
Well, sure. Okay, so this is the title track, A Matter of Fact.
Thank you.
Tony Wynn CD, A Matter of Fact. Very smooth, Tony.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, thank you. Very smooth. Mm-hmm. Now, Tony, I wanted to ask you and let you know, we've talked, you know, previously many of times, and
right.
I want to ask you while we're on the air, what are some of the challenges that you face as an independent artist to try to get your music out in the mainstream? Because right now, with the loss of the radio stations, it seems like you guys, independent artists, have more of a you can try to get your music on the same level as a mainstream
right.
act, because
right.
like so now there's no major radio stations to kind of push
right.
push everybody's music.
Well, it's very difficult, and usually what we take advantage of is when there is a major headliner that performs in our city, you know, we sometimes get the opportunity to open up for these artists. So, for example, you know, like you mentioned, Walter Beasley, like if Walter Beasley is going to be playing in my town, you know, a lot of times you can get with promoters and, you know, waive your fee in order to open up for this artist. So if several thousand people are coming to hear him, you know they're going to hear you. Like I remember a couple of years back, I opened up for Kim, you know, the vocalist Kim.
Yes.
At the House of Blues, and I never would have had the opportunity, you know, to perform, you know, in a setting like that with that, you know, a large number of people if I hadn't opened for him. And when I did, it, you know, it gave me a lot more exposure than I would have ordinarily have gotten if just playing at, you know, a local club. So a lot of times we take advantage of, you know, those particular venues, you know, to, you know, bring awareness, you know, to our music and our material.
Now, you've also opened up for Michael Bublé, Lenny
yes.
Williams, and the Barquets. Now, was that
yes.
the same?
Same thing. I actually
okay.
opened up for Lenny Williams and the Barquets, and we were actually the jazz act, you know, followed by Lenny Williams and the Funk Masters. So, you know, like, and I'm always quoting my dad, you know, you got to get in where you fit in. You know,
mm-hmm.
and there's a radio station in Orlando, you know, that basically plays, you know, R&B. Well, the majority of the people that listen to that R&B station also listen to jazz.
Yeah.
You know, also listen to smooth jazz. So it was no problem fitting into, you know, that format. You know, it's not like everybody got up and left. Because, you know, like I said, those types of music, because I'm quite sure, you know, you guys are really into smooth jazz, but I know you get into some R&B as well, some old school R&B.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
You know, and it all comes from the same thing, because back during the days of Motown, most of the musicians that backed up guys like Marvin Gaye, you know, they were jazz musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so jazz and R&B and blues, you know, they're relatives, they're close relatives.
Yeah.
Now
I don't think I'm going to open up for Crosby, Stills and Nash, you know. so I got to stay somewhere in the ballpark. Excuse me for interrupting.
No, I'm very curious as to what the experience was like opening up for Michael Bublé.
Oh, it was incredible. Actually, I played down in West Palm Beach. They have something called the Sunfest. And originally it was the Jazz Fest. But, you know, with a lot of pressure from, you know, from the locals, you know, they were asked to introduce, you know, other genres of music. I mean, That same
mm-hmm.
particular week that I had that they had Hootie and the Blowfish, you know. So the stage that I was performing on was the jazz stage, and when we went up, it was incredible, and it was so strange because 2 years before that I had gone to the Jazz Fest, and I was in the audience, and I'm looking up, and I said, man, I would love to play there someday, you know, I would love to play on that stage. So I got in contact with the promoters, the organizers of that particular event, and they asked, you send in the CD and a bio and promo package or whatever. And I sent it, and I never thought that I would get picked because, there's actually about 500, applications they have to look at. And once I found out I got picked, man, I was just like blown away. And the money, and the money that they pay, for opening acts is really not, anything to, jump up and down about. But the exposure and an opportunity to show your craft, man, is priceless. So opening up for Michael Blublé, and that's when he first came out, it was incredible. He's a very gracious and humble, a guy, and you just can't imagine how can a guy that young be singing this kind of stuff. I mean, where did you you would expect him to be singing something, from Nine Inch Nails. I mean, like, how did you come about? But the guy does an incredible job. And his voice is just impeccable, for such a young guy, taking on that type of music.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's interesting that you were able to open up in front of these people, because you're right, a lot of artists don't get the exposure that they deserve and that they need to get their music heard. And you were very lucky to be able to be in front of such a diverse crowd.
Right.
To establish a new fan base for yourself.
Yeah, and to add to that, there are scores of musicians like me in town, your towns, that are trying to get their music heard. Because I was talking to Mike a couple of months back, and he was talking about, how he was doing these jazz concerts and festivals, and how, some musicians were willing to forego pay just to get the opportunity, to be seen,
Right.
And sometimes that's all it takes. Sometimes that's all it takes. Because if you think about basketball and you think about the number of basketball teams there are and the number of professional basketball players that, that are playing, that is a drop in the bucket of how many guys are trying to make it on pro teams. So when you look at it that way, the level of success that I've had, I mean, I'm just tickled pink because, I don't think without luck, I would even had the opportunity, to play in some of these venues. So if I never become, a major headliner or a national recording artist, I'm just grateful and happy that I've reached this level. Because like I said, in your towns, there's scores of saxophone players and guitar players and keyboard players that never get the opportunity to be heard on a large stage.
That's very true. Very true.
Very true. All right, let's listen to one more song, and I want to play track number two, Those Eyes. Tell me about this one.
Okay, Those Eyes, and a lot of my songs, they have meanings behind them, and this song has to do with the fact that I was in the park, and I ran across this very attractive young lady, and since that encounter, it just, what I'm talking about, Mike.
Oh,
I mean, I was just blown away, and I went home and I said, man, I got to write a song about this girl had the most beautiful eyes. And I wrote this song, which basically reflects, that particular a situation, that encounter, and it's called Those Eyes.
Okay.
and I'm doing the vocals and the flute on this one.
Okay. Those Eyes.
Yes.
Those Eyes. That is from Tony Wynn's A Matter of Fact CD. Tony, where can we find this CD?
You can find it on cdbaby.com. Just do a Tony Wynn search. And that is a awesome clearinghouse for independent artists. And I actually found my guitar player on that site. And also, you can go to Amazon. I'm on Amazon.com. So if all fails, just Google Tony Wynn, and I should pop up somewhere.
And are you working on new music?
Yes, I am. I'm always working on new music. I have actually I have about 60 songs. Some of the songs that didn't make it on my first CD made it on my second. And some of the songs that didn't make it on my second CD are going to make it on my third CD. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll actually go out and perform my new music, in order to get feedback on what I should put on my new CD. And I try to put as much on there as I possibly can. As you can see on my second CD, there's like six CDs, there's like 15 songs.
Right.
So here's the key. Everybody wants a deal. Everybody wants a bargain. So this is a bargain. I'm giving them more than what they're paying for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when do you expect the next CD to be out?
It should happen sometime this fall. I'm not sure if you're aware, but I'm also an engineer at the Kennedy Space Center. And I'm getting ready to end that career pretty soon. I've been there for quite a long time, and I'm ready to retire. And I'm going to devote a lot more of my time, to my music and getting my music out there. You got to secure your 401k and your retirement, because this music, it's a tough field, and you have to have a backup plan. I run into a lot of young musicians, and they say they want to do this. I say, you got to have a backup plan. And being that I've been out an engineer at the Space Center, I can play when I want to, where I want to, and how I want to. So I'm not pressured by necessity to do whatever it takes, to put food on the table. I can play music because I love it and not because I have to play it.
Right. All right. Well, congratulations to you and good luck. Look forward to that next CD for sure. And thank you for joining us today.
Yes, and I'd like to thank you and Mike, so graciously for giving me the opportunity, to talk and give a little insight on who I am. And the thing that you guys do is wonderful, and I appreciate it, and continue standing up for, us jazz musicians, especially those of us, that don't get the opportunity, to reach mass audiences. Thank you so much for what you're doing and your radio station.
Oh, thank you. We are happy to do it. Jazz is our passion. Smooth jazz particularly is my passion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to do it. Thank you.
No problem. I appreciate it.
Hey.
Well, you have a great day, Mikey.
Yeah, you too. And don't y'all eat too much barbecue.
That's right. That's right.
I'm headed over to Stone Nose House.
As soon as we get off air with you, I'm going straight to the grill. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm headed over to Stone Nose, too.
Hey, me too. I'm checking out some places. I'm going to go to get some food as well. But, Hey, Mike, let's talk sometime. And Terry, it was a pleasure meeting you, and
hopefully
we get to talk again soon, okay?
Definitely.
Yes, definitely.
Yes.
Thanks so much, folks.
All right, Tony.
Thanks, Tony. You have a good day.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Tony Wynn. The name of the CD is A Matter of Fact. You can find him on TonyWynn-GrooveFactor.com. He is also on Facebook as well. So, yes, today is Show Nuff Barbecue Day,
and that's where I am headed.
Show enough. Okay, we have a phone call. Let me take this call right quick. Area code 313. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hi. I just wanted to say that Tony Wynn is a great artist, and I've plan on buying both the CDs. So thank you very much for having them on.
Oh, you're quite welcome. What is your name?
I'm the crazy old man. And
the crazy old man.
Yeah.
Well, so I could save you some money. I have a CD to give away. If you would like it, I can mail it to you.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, if you would email me at talkingsmoothjazz@yahoo.com with your name and address, I will send you the CD that we played today.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. That's talkingsmoothjazz@yahoo.com.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. So, I'm headed over to my sister's, where, sure enough, my youngest brother is barbecuing. Cannot wait. And, Mike, I'm going to try to get a little video up for you today and post that on Facebook for you.
That's right. Thank you. And I'm about to head over to my dad's house, where there's some burgers with my name on it. So, I'll be definitely.
Like yesterday.
Yes, just like yesterday. Yes, definitely. So,
okay. That's funny. All right, next Saturday, June 5th and 6th, next Saturday is a two-hour show. We will be talking to a group called Guilty Pleasures, the first hour, and Walter Beasley, the second hour. Walter has a new CD called Live in the Groove, or is it The Grove, Mike?
Live in the Groove, yeah, in the Grove.
Okay. That'll be the second hour for June 6th. And then on Sunday, a singer, Loretta Shelby, will be on. And then on Thursday, June 10th, we will be talking to keyboardist Chris Geese. He has a new CD out called Island of a Thousand Dreams. So we will be talking to him on Thursday. And that's going to be 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on Thursday.
Yes.
So mark your calendars for that. All right, Mike, we have 3 minutes. Anything else you want to add?
No, that's it. Just enjoy your holiday, everybody. And like I said, don't eat too much. And CD, don't be eating too much. You and Andrew, don't be eating too much, fella. So we'll see you guys next
CD
week.
CD already too much. He said he was so full, he had troubles typing, so.
Oh,
he's already eating too much.
Yes,
but thank you, Andrew Harris, C.D. McGee, Gregory Fisher, Injustice System, COM.
Yeah.
Thank you all for hanging out with us in the chat room. I hope you all have a great holiday weekend. Thank you again. So you have been listening to Talking Smooth Jazz with your host, Jazz Queen.
And Mike Reynolds.
And we look forward to talking smooth jazz with you next week. Have a great holiday weekend and a safe one. And until next time, keep it smooth.